This is Mike Dolce.
Ian McCall. Jan's Little Evil Pulver.
The Crippler Chris Levin. And you're listening to
Talking Brawls.
Hello and welcome to the Talking Brawls Mixed Martial Arts Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Niall McGrath. Joined alongside me today, Mark Moriarty. Mark, what's happening, brother?
I'm amazing.
Oh, as usual, the stupid puns. Mark, what a week in the mixed martial arts world. Absolutely crazy. But before we get to that, we'll tell the guys who we have on the show today.
Who could we have? Is it Jesus?
Guys, we have a good lineup today as well. We've a bit of a TUF lineup. We have the Nottingham card coming up, being pretty close to home for us. We have to promote this, and we're really happy about this being over on our side of the pond, so to speak. So we have Andy Ogle on the show today, and Andy was an absolute utter gentleman, I have to say, as well.
A Geordie gentleman, you might say.
Geordie boy, probably a Sunderland fan though, so insulting too much. We didn't ask him that.
Yeah, you see, this is the thing, that we've had the balls to ask many questions to many people, but the one question we didn't have the balls to ask was Andy Ogle, Sunderland or a Newcastle fan? I know, because we know the Geordie culture, and we know just how bad, if you get the wrong side of the tie, is.
But we didn't want to dislike him, so that's the reason.
Well, no, you can't dislike Newcastle
I'm
fans.
I'm joking, that's what I'm saying. Okay, and also on the show today we had, obviously Andy was on TUF, the first live edition, and we have John Prince Albert, TUF 14. His last fight against Eric Perez was an absolute mockery, because Kim Wimslow, the referee, stopped that fight, which was an absolute disgrace. It should have never been stopped. He never tapped out, never looked like submitting. And, you know, the guy's a battler. And yesterday it was announced that he's fighting Scott Jorgensen at UFC on Fox 5 in December. So he's on the main card of that event. So tune in and listen to that as well. And also on the show today, we have a bumper edition. I can't believe it.
We thought we had nothing for today. But then all of a sudden,
we pull shit out of the bag. Yeah? We've Ed Suarez on the fucking line. Talking about, you know, all his guys in his camp, and
a natter, you might say.
Yes, a little bit of a natter. We talk about, obviously, Yusuf Manacho, Jose Aldo, and the Nog brothers, etc. So,
Silver lad.
Yeah, and the Nogs.
I'm trying to get with it, sorry. Boom.
And also on the line today we had Damon Martin of MMAweekly.com, which was a great pleasure to us, because Damon is actually from his heritage, his roots and stuff are from around the corner, in Dundrum. He said to us today, which I'm from Churchtown, which is literally 5 minutes walk around the corner. So great to hear from Damon, and obviously Damon's one of the top guys
absolutely
in the mixed martial arts
bloke
world. So top man, and everyone have a listen to his show on MMAweekly.com and the website. So Mark, first of all, let's get started. What a fucking another mind-blowing week with Frankie Edgar. I'm very strong on Frankie staying at 155. Obviously, everyone knew that he made the decision to drop to 145, but getting a title fight, obviously, Eric Cockhead pulled out.
It's the third time you've done that, you know.
Yeah, no, it's not really. But
you may think I might edit it to make you sound cooler, but you're wrong.
But Eric Cock obviously pulled out due to injury. You know, where does it put that division? Like, obviously Frank's coming in, like, it says a lot about the division. There's not much strength, and like, we know Frankie could, you know, go at most guys. Frankie, in my eyes, is still the champ at 155. He won that fight against Anderson. I don't care what anyone says, but Mark, what's your opinion on that?
Well, I think when a division is almost written off, such as that one, and once a division is almost killed off by one supreme fighter, Dana and the boys just basically realise that they can go, well, we can use this to put together a super fight, and fuck the rest of them. You know, kind of anyone coming through, they can just be passing kind of, you know, tradesmen, you know, kind of to come up and fight the whoever the champ is. But in reality, the only way they can make money with that division and with that champion anymore, with that person who's killed everyone else in the division, is by putting together a super fight. And possibly this is the only way to go for them.
Well, who is there in that division? You've Chan Jung Sung is on the shelf at the moment. You have
Chad
Mendes.
Yeah, we were talking last week that like
Cody McKenzie joke.
We know that the Cody McKenzie, the guillotine, it could well have enraptured the hearts of the nation. But now, I thought the Korean Zombie fight would have been amazing as a build up for Edgar.
Frank, yeah.
Yeah, just to see him kind of, you know, get used to it again. And the fact
as well, I think it undervalues the division, the fact that he's gone straight in the title fight.
Well, did you feel as well that there was going to be all the Chael haters kind of jumping up and down, kind of going, oh my God, he's walked into a title fight?
I don't think it's something to do with that. At the end of the day, right, the division isn't that strong. Let's be honest.
No, I know that. What I mean is that I was just thinking that in the same way that you say that, is it undervaluing the division? Just in the sense that if he walks into it anyway, irrelevant to the fact that there's no one else in front of him that he should have fought, and with the Korean Zombie on the table anyway, and not being able to fight him, there technically was no other real fight for him there.
Shad Mendes, cock.
Well, like, you know, Dustin in a prison cell environment.
Dustin Poirier, possibly. But yeah. Listen, Frankie, I think, still is the man at, you know, 155 in my eyes.
Yeah, I know.
You know, he is a lightweight champion in my eyes.
I know, but we can only push this for so far.
Yeah, we can only push it. If you look at the UFC's point of value, they could have let one division go, right? Do it like Ultimate Fighter show for that division, like time and time again, whatever. Bring guys down. But Frankie is not the guy to step. He's one of the guys fighting at his weight. He should be allowed at his weight. He got pressured into going down, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, yeah.
Damon Martin agreed me later on the show, as you'll hear. You know, there's so many fights you can put on. You've Pettis, you've Lozon, guys that come from WC over to the UFC. So many smashing fights. It's 1, 2, 3 fights. And I think Frankie would have, you know, got his rubber match against Henderson. Like, listen, come on.
But there's so many fights.
He won that last fight. I don't care. I'm going to leave it at that anyway. Frankie is, you know, lightweight champion in my eyes.
But no, what's the answer then? Because we have so many fighters of a similar standard filling up divisions. And, like, do we get rid of the division?
Sorry,
and
then the shit that went on with the media about that last fight with Edgar and Henderson. Sorry, people are going, it was a touch and go decision. There was a perception, like there was in the first fight between those two. The upkick fucked Frankie because he looked damaged, and people perceived it to be Henderson's fight. Look at the second fight, man. He won that 3 rounds to 2, no question. He had the more significant strike. Look at the rules of the octagon.
There's a genuine fact that there's never been anyone who has any place, blog, position in the media, in the mixed martial arts world, who has ever said that Benson Henderson won that fight. That is a fact. No, they didn't really.
They didn't make a decision. I've made a decision.
A lot of people said there was a draw.
But I don't think there's a case to make a decision. I think it was 3 rounds to 2. Bang.
Irrelevant to anything. It wasn't
okay,
clear.
We're going around in circles.
I didn't want to go back to it for a second. But the fact is that if whatever you say, it wasn't clear. It was never clear. It was always going to be a close fight. You can't say it was a clear Frankie Edgar decision without
a massively clear, but the significant fucking points that should have been taken into account were in Edgar's favour. He got the more significant strikes and the takedowns in the rounds that matters. Who gives a shit about what landed? Like, maybe 1 or 2 punches in the close stand-up. Edgar won that fight. I don't care. That's it. We're leaving it at that. I don't give a shit.
you might not have realised this if you've been listening to this podcast as a bit of a veteran at this stage, but Noel actually really thinks that Frankie Edgar won both of those fights.
I fucking did, and say about now. Okay, we're moving on.
But you're just more vicious and
I'm not
angry.
I'm just
about
realistic. I think people just fucking dream half the time they're watching shit. Moving on to 1FC this morning, our time, which would have been 11:30 Irish time in Dublin. I watched the prelims of 1FC and I was very impressed with the whole setup and the way the show went down.
Well, I missed it all. Could you lead the way on this?
I will.
What was it like as a setup to see? What would you compare it to as a
UFC?
UFC?
It was really, really professional. I haven't watched it before. The whole, like, you know, pyrotechnics was exceptional. The graphics they displayed were awesome. Victor Quay's done a very good job, and we hope to get Victor on, obviously, in a few weeks with the show.
What was the stream like?
The stream was okay. It wasn't the worst. Like, to be honest, it was on live TV. The guys who actually did the pay-per-view was $9.99 to buy. I've no credit card, so I couldn't buy it because my credit card got cancelled.
How did you find it?
No, I got the prelims are free.
Oh, the prelims.
So I watched the prelims. Okay. And I saw earlier on, I'm not going to say where, the Arlovski fight and Tim Sylvia. But
we've got legal representation, people. Don't even come after us, we'll kill you.
But yeah, I was sorry to see Jens obviously lose because Jens has been on the show before. And
yeah, it was so sad. I was listening to a live tweet of it.
Yeah, you know, Eric Kelly looks like a good fighter, to be honest. He does look good. But Jens made a good comeback in the second round, but he just couldn't keep up with it. And, you know, Jens is a great guy. And, you know,
I suppose he's fighting for money now. Like, you're not kind of, he's making a living.
Let's not make a judgment, Jens.
Yeah, no, but that's nobody. Nobody's making a living. Yeah,
well, we've had Jens on the show before. I think Jens is a great guy.
He's a great guy.
Obviously, he is. And you know,
but I suppose when you're fighting to make a living for your family, that's what you do. Yeah.
Well, best luck to Jens in the future. And I'd love to have Jens on again soon enough. So hopefully we will in the coming months and weeks or years or whatever you want to call it. But Jens, top man, pioneer for the sport. Love him. And obviously Tim Sylvia and Arlovski, absolute disaster of a fight again. Sorry, I'm not going to
lie. Did you sit through
yellow cards and like you're just going fuck me,
what
man.
What the fuck was
fourth
that?
Fourth fight.
I just saw Twitter explode. That was all like
the weigh-ins. I watched the weigh-ins yesterday and they both stared each other down for about fucking 40 minutes and nothing happened and both the guys were going had to be separated again by Victor Quay and it was just a joke really and the fight was exactly the same as Luke Thomas told us last week. You know, time's up for these guys, big time. ONE FC is obviously a major promotion at the moment, but they will never go back in Zuffa Promotions land again.
But
rightly so.
Did you start almost getting lured in and starting to get vaguely excited because of the very, very professional promo videos that ONE FC were putting forward?
That's it.
I found myself being suckered in and starting to believe that this could actually be a big main event.
Did you see the Jens Pulver video?
Oh, it was unbelievable. It was really good.
It was really emotional and stuff. And obviously, Jens had a...
When you know the story, it's pretty...
If you know about Jens, you know, he's a great documentary.
I was watching Driven last night.
It's one of the best, along with we've had Chad George on before, Occupation Fighter. It's one of those ones where it really, you know, it G's you up and it
hits home. It's a raw documentary about being
beating around the bush.
Yeah,
simple as that. Good stuff and emotional stuff as well. Really, let's be honest about it. And if you want to be a fighter, have a look at those fucking two kids.
I know. When I'm sitting down to do a bit of editing, I end up watching about half hour of Driven or Occupation Fighter.
I watch Occupation Fighter about five times. I love it. I still watch it the whole time. I think Chad George and obviously we're going to talk to Andre pretty soon as well. So
yeah, that'd be deadly. Actually.
We've so much shit in the pipeline, motherfuckers. Keep tuned in.
God, it's crazy.
It's fucking amazing. But Phil Baroni as well, in fairness, I don't particularly like the guy, his attitude. He's sort of a Jason Miller type, you know.
I think he's just putting it on a bit, though.
He does. He came out today and he gave his fingers to the crowd and left. I don't like that.
Why?
Disrespect. Because it's fucking rude, man. That's what it is.
We're swearing like fucking...
But yeah, listen, we're a podcast. I've said this to you before. A podcast is not like you sit down and script something. We don't script anything, right? But I'm just saying to you now that like he goes out with his fingers up. He's looking for a response. Like you're looking at me like a weirdo now with your weird face.
Well, no, like I have one of those beautiful faces which is like, sometimes can be intimidating because of the beauty of it.
No.
But it's one of those things that you got to work out that sometimes you're just selling a fight.
He's putting on a show to make a few points.
What's wrong with that?
I tell you what,
he's a fucking promoter. He's a fight promoter.
Fair play to me. One today, very good stoppage. But the guy,
what's different to that in Chael Sonnen?
Ribeiro, who he's fighting today, right?
Yeah.
He's not a fighter, okay? He's more losses than he has wins, right? You're going with guys that he's older than Baroni, right? Baroni's 36, he was 37. And went in, punched him once. Listen, come on. Look,
yeah, but what's wrong with
Baroni was a mockery the last four or five times.
What's wrong with the bad guy coming into the hometown? Like, you know, as the bad guy. That's what you're meant to do.
Yeah, it's good for him.
That's the job. Baroni looks
like a Bob Sapp or Jason Miller who's going to have problems with his health.
Well, no, he does, in the next 2 years. I don't question things like him doing the two fingers to the crowd, because I think that's just what you do when you're in that. You're a performer. You're a fighter. And if you're being the invader, the guy coming into the home environment with everyone going, oh, we love you,
but he wasn't. He was fighting a Brazilian.
What?
He was fighting a Brazilian.
No, we can all chuck out little facts and figures
I'm just telling you.
What I'm saying is that I think Baroni is a superhero, and I think he is going to be the UFC champion next year.
Okay, well, and then you woke up and you...
Do I have to back that up as a statement?
You saw Laprisian.
Yeah, no, once I don't have to back that up in any way, I should be grand, I think.
Listen, let's get things closer to home. Obviously, we had...
Thanks, Niall, for moving on after that. Makes me feel a lot better.
We'd Andy Ogle on the show. we talked to him earlier on, and, you know, Andy be the top guys on the UFC Nottingham card, which takes place in about 3 weeks' time, precisely. So we were delighted to have Andy on the show, and Andy's an absolute top gentleman. So UFC Nottingham, you can still get your tickets. I think there's one or two available left at Capital Arena FM.
Capital FM Arena.
CapitalFArena.com and UFC.com. You can get your tickets for UFC Nottingham on UFC on Fuel TV 5. So
it's like literally a heaven of mixed martial arts.
So we're going to be there as well. You can see the Talking Brawlers. So listen to the interview with Andy, and we'll get back to you in a few minutes. Take it easy, brothers.
Boom.
This is John Albert from the UFC, and you've been listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by Andy the Little Axe Ogle, who is making his UFC debut versus Akira Korsani at UFC on Fuel TV in the Capital FM Arena in Nottingham. Andy, first of all, thanks a million for coming on the line. How are things with you? You keeping well?
I'm doing great. Just eagerly awaiting this UFC debut and just training as hard as I can.
And Andy, obviously we saw you on the TUF Live. How much are you looking forward to this debut of yours in the UFC? And clearly we saw your emotions in the series when you asked Dana for the fighting Nottingham. How proud are you to fight in your home country?
Oh, well... I'm just proud to be making my UFC debut, but just to put the icing on the cake, I'm doing it in England, you know, and on the largest stage ever is, you know, and I feel as if I get to represent myself, my hometown, and my country well on the biggest international arena, you know, like the biggest international stage, and I hope to, like, do it well, and basically, I'm aiming to create some fireworks on the night.
And Andy as well, obviously Akira Korsani, you know, he was pulled off the card in Sweden there because of injury. How much you know about Akira? Obviously, he was on The Ultimate Fighter as well in the previous season. How have you prepared for the fight against him?
Yeah, there's one thing that you've mentioned there, injuries, and we'll see what they're like, and we'll see how that takes its toll on the fight as well. Is age being a little bit of a factor. Your body's a lot like a car. You wouldn't put rubbish petrol into a Ferrari. You'd put the best petrol in the Ferrari. You don't try to do it cheap. You know. We'll see how well Akira is taking care of his body. I pride myself on having a very good gas tank,
yeah,
and pushing a fight and keeping a good pace. And I know he comes out fast and comes out hard, but my question to him is, what are you going to do when I just keep that pace? When I won't slow down, because, well, it's just not going to happen. But we'll see. We'll see if he can keep up his relentless pace. And he starts very fast, but he's not the one that always finishes the fastest. And I'm ready for war. I'm ready for anything that he can throw at me. I'm thinking about it, you know. I'm not expecting an easy night.
Yeah.
It would be disrespectful to him to ever think about an easy night, but if the best comes, the best happens. But I'm expecting him to throw everything, including the kitchen sink.
Andy, what's it like to actually be preparing for your first fight in the UFC outside, now that you've got outside the box of the tough house where you had cameras in front of you all the time and that pressure was on you all of the time and you knew the people, you were living with the people you were fighting? What's it like to actually have a few months to actually prepare and to study your opponent?
Well, this is a weird thing because the house was easy with regard that I never ever had to look at my watch. I never had to keep track of the time, so I never had to think about traveling to training. There was always a phone call on the house phone, and they would say, "All right, be ready in half an hour. Be ready in an hour for training." And food was supplied. There was a lot of stress with the camera in my face all the time, but on the other hand, mentally, I kind of logged off. I didn't really think about too much. All the training was supplied, and now it's all down to me. So when I came back off the show, I was like, "Shit, I've got to log my brain back on." and then there's a different pressure. No cameras, so I get to do whatever I want. But the pressure now is, am I doing enough? Am I doing too much? You know,
it's hard to tell.
Like different days, you're lying in bed and you almost crying yourself to sleep because you've done three sessions in the day and you're really, really hurting. And you think, did I do a little bit too much today? And then, you know, you go, well, it's never enough, you know. I'm perfectionist. It's never enough. There's never enough hours in the day. It's very weird. It's you just want to perform the best you can, and you just want the best out of yourself. And sometimes you just need somebody to pull the reins in a little. And Cullen's that man at Calbon, and Cullen Heron really does pull the reins in, and he guides me in the right direction. So I'm just pleased that I've got him.
Andy, what's the greatest thing that was added to your game through the tough training series? Have you changed much about yourself in training with such top-level coaches and fighters? And have you changed much in what you're doing now going into your first proper UFC fight?
There's an absolutely awesome quote on 40-year-old Virgin, right? Dude, you're putting the pussy on a pedestal. I think we look at a lot of the guys in the UFC, and we kind of put them on a pedestal, and we believe that they're supermen.
Yeah.
Now they are brilliant fighters. Everybody's a brilliant fighter in the UFC, but nobody is Superman, right? And I think that's kind of what I learned. You know, like Uriah Faber can be submitted. And he's just an ordinary guy. And the only difference is he got his opportunity and he's made his money. And under the lights, he performs. And it's a mental side. And I've been in the biggest, toughest, mentalest, most mental battle ever. And that's been in front of a camera for 24 hours a day for 3 months without no television, no radio, no phone, no newspaper, no loved ones, no music, not even allowed to sing a song. You know, we got told off because we walked in the house and started singing a Christmas song.
Jesus.
This guy comes in from the production and he goes, "Robert P. Humperdinck, 1921. And I went, what does that mean? He goes, "Robert P. Humperdinck, 1921. I went, what the fuck does that mean? He went, "That's what's copyrighted." I went, "Jesus Christ, man, seriously, like, Christmas is copyrighted? Christmas is copyrighted?" Dude, like, you know, like, if I can deal with that house for 3 months, I can deal with anything, man. It was tough, man. I couldn't even go to the toilet without a camera in the bathroom. I was looking up at the camera every time I was on the bathroom thinking, is somebody watching me in the bathroom right now?
Andy, yeah, what's it like to train without music? Is it tricky to not be able to listen to what you want and have the phone and have the people close to you around
you? Depends whether you do that or not, though, really, does it?
See, that's the thing. I usually don't really train to music. I'm not much of a music lover. I broke my iPod when I was like 17, and I just never replaced it.
You're probably the right move.
So, I kind of just say I'm the boring person that listens to what the radio tells me to listen to. But I can't listen to Radio 1. Chris Miles is my head, and they can't call that a radio station. They don't even play music.
But
I like to listen to smooth radio.
Boom. good stuff, Andy. And you were saying about popularity. Clearly, you were the most popular guy in the house with the cameras and stuff. How much did that affect your personal life when you got home to the UK? And was there a lot more publicity and media attention around you when you got back to Sunderland?
Some people say to me, they go, wow, you replied to a message on Facebook. Wow, you replied to a message on Twitter.
Yeah.
And I'm like, well, dude, why wouldn't I? You know, like, I'm just Andy, you know? It's just the same for me, you know? Like, I'm a natural born entertainer, though. And I think I got a little bit of popularity just because I tell people the way it is. And I like to treat people how I'd like to be treated back.
Yeah.
And if that makes me popular, then I'm happy for that. But I don't believe honesty and trying to be a good person should make me too popular. I've still got a lot of proof, and I'll be Mr. Popular one day when I've got that title around my waist.
And Andy, obviously, you know, with the whole situation with John Jones, what's your take on that? Talking about you know, popularity and the honest and right thing to do. What do you think? What's your view on John Jones? The whole situation that went down last weekend.
John Jones is that kind of guy that he's the kind of person where he was the kid in school that didn't need to actually revise to get very good grades in a test, you know? The kid that always just got the good grades and he used to really work hard, get a good grade.
Like me.
And this guy would always get something better. Like, he genetically gets it. He's a freak. He's absolutely superb. And he knows it, we know it, and I think before he goes to bed, he looks at himself in the mirror and says, "Dude, you are awesome." You know, and too right, he deserves it. He's a great fighter, but I think he was damned if he did and damned if he didn't. I think Shale had talked his way into the position.
Yeah.
But at that moment, everybody was quite fearful of actually stepping up, and a man that was a weight class lower, even if he did talk himself into that position, he was the only one willing to step up.
Yeah.
And a lot of people actually, not just fighters that have lost out on money, people that were going to the event, the viewers,
fans,
and they're the ones that pay the tickets, and they're the ones that pay the fighters, really, in respect. People have lost out on hotels. People have lost out on taking work off, and also flights, and even fucking up babysitters, time routers.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
You know,
across the board.
Yeah, and I really, just from him pulling, he's messed up a lot of people's time. But then again, damned if he does, damned if he doesn't. It's a very difficult position to be in.
Yeah.
But Andy, you've come from something like, when you come from Tough and you actually, in mixed martial arts, there's very few occasions when you get to be part of a team. When you're on Uriah's team and you have that camaraderie between fighters, do you find that that sometimes gets lost down the road and people just look after yourself as they rise the ladder and they kind of go, fuck everyone else, just look after myself, screw everyone else, the other fighters don't matter? Do you think that's a changing face in mixed martial arts and that's just something which is inevitable?
I think mixed martial arts is a very, very lonely sport.
Yeah.
And I've talked about this before, and to my girlfriend, to my loved ones, and to teammates, that when we enter the cage, we're all alone. And when we're training with our team, nobody wants to accept that somebody's the top dog. We all want to be the top dog. So we're all actually trying to take this battle on by ourselves. So as much as there is a team element, you really do kind of have to look out for number one. And it's horrible. It's a horrible thing because, you know, I don't know. I feel as if it is very much a solo sport, and it can be a very lonely sport. But, he's in a very difficult position, he shouldn't be shitting on people as much as he is.
Yeah, I completely agree. And Andy, just before we wrap it up, a couple more questions. Obviously, Akira Korasani is the number one man in your mind. What's going to happen in this fight? Can you tell us what's Andy O going to do in this fight come September 29th in the Capital FM Arena in Nottingham?
I'm going to be the best me I can be. I'm going to be the most focused me. And I'm also going to be the happiest me, because I know stepping in my cage, there's going to be no way that I could be any better than what I will be on that night. So I'm going to go in with a little bit less weight on my shoulders, knowing that basically this is the best me that there's ever going to be, and at this time. And what will happen, but I know that to beat me, he's going to have to kill me, or he's going to have to knock me out, you know. I can't see him winning. It's my destiny. I believe it's my destiny to win, and I'll be damned if he'll beat me. I could be fighting on local shows, and fighting mugs, fighting cans, fighting wannabe mixed martial artists. But I don't. I want to be in the UFC. I want to be fighting the best guys out there. And I welcome the challenge. And as you say, Akira, bring it. Just let's give the fans something that they want to see. And let's get fighting the night. Hell, it's my girlfriend's birthday that night.
Brilliant. Wow.
I could do with extra coin. I could do with extra money. After this fight, I wouldn't mind eating like Nando's several times a day. I've got a girlfriend that likes expensive stuff. let's do it, man. Fucking, let's give the fans what they want to see. You know, this is why we want to be in the UFC, because it is the creme de la creme, the top division. It's where everybody wants to be.
Definitely.
I want to be a boring fighter. I want to show people, I want to give people a fight with, so I want to give them their money's worth. People talk about the UK cards being not as a main stage and a high profile. Hell, look at this card, man. There is not one fight on this card which isn't a fucking war. You know, it really is great. It may not have your top 10 guys, but it's got very, very competitive and very hard fights, man.
Yeah.
It's a great card.
Completely agree.
Have you got the buses booked for the fans coming up the motorway? How many people are you bringing up with you?
You know what? I've got a small little crowd of just my family. I haven't really been focusing on tickets or nothing. I let everybody sort their own tickets. But as long as I've got my mother, my father, and my girl, and my grandparents there, that's all that matters. you know, Your blood's a lot thicker than water.
That's it.
That was one of the things in the tough. You know, you really understand how much it means for your family to be there and your loved ones to be there, because who do we share these wins with better than our loved ones? The ones that see the pain every single day. You know, they see the dieting. You know, when I can't go to Nando's. Not this week. And then she goes, well, when is your cheat day? When's your cheat day? And I'll say, well, it's next Sunday, darling. Ah, I don't want it to be next Sunday. I'm like, shut the fuck up. This is really hard. And then the week of Carb Depleting, she'll say, chicken and spinach with tomatoes, that doesn't look very nice. Well, you know what, darling? It isn't.
Oh, man,
but
you're a character.
Telling me that this doesn't look the most appetizing whilst you're eating fish and chips isn't the best.
And he announced the after party, Ogle, after it in Nando's. I'd say that's the answer. We'll be there.
Listen, Andy, you're an absolute gentleman and great to chat to you. Some character. Thanks a million to have you on. I hope everything goes really well for you at UFC on Fuel TV 5 in the Capital FM Arena in Nottingham. And we'll hope to see you there as well, mate.
Definitely, man.
Cheers, guys.
And that was Andy Ogle of The Ultimate Fighter Live. What a guy. Absolute gentleman. Top man. Mark, what do you reckon his chances are against Akira Kurosani at UFC on Fuel TV 5 in Nottingham?
I think it's going to be a really tough fight, but I think it's going to be a really interesting one. I hope Ogle can pull this one out of the bag. I really do think he has the skills to do it. And I think that I think the UFC wants to push him. They see something in him. They see him as a kind of a Dan Hardy like a kind of a face for Britain.
Everyone loves him.
Yeah, someone they can actually sell over here properly. And I'm excited about that.
But Akira Kurosani as well. Obviously, he was he's a TUF veteran as well. Coming off Ultimate Fighter 14, the last series before the live one came on. We don't know what's going to happen with that as well yet. So Akira obviously was pulled from the card, Gustafsson versus Thiago Silva, because of injury. So how do you think it's going to fare for him as well? Like, it's, you're sort of going like, what is Kurosani going to do? Because, you know, he was at a controversial decision as well in the Tough House, and, you know, someone like John Alberts fighting on Fox. Where is everything going at the moment with the TUF guys?
How many? Well, like, I've said it before and all that, like, I think some of the tough guys are being, they're being groomed into almost being lower card fillers sometimes, and I don't like that they're not trying to actually build them up to big stars anymore. And I think there's been a lot of guys who they've let slip through the cracks. And I think if you present people as undercard talent at the start, it's very hard to rise above that at any stage. And I feel people just create an image of what that fighter is, and they keep with that. I think Akira Kurosani is just, he's someone who,
he looked pretty good in the house in Farniston when he was there.
It's so hard because, like, I suppose we're going back, aren't we? Isn't Tough going back too? It's not live anymore now, is it?
Well, I'm not sure what they're going to do with the next season, but apparently it's it's the Brazilian thing, and they're doing the Roy Nelson and
The Diaz brothers. Roy, that's going to be fantastic. What a team! It's like the most put together team in the entire
Roy
world.
Roy Nelson against Carwin, so it's going to be very, very interesting. But moving on, anyway, we had another top TUF contestant, and we've done sort of a tough thing and mixed up again today because it's a bit different. We had John Prince Albert on from TUF 14, and John actually is coming off a loss to Eric Perez, which Kim Wimslow made the worst decision I've ever seen in my fucking life. She called a top 8 that he made. Apparently he made. He did not make.
It was the time
Kim
of the month.
Wimslow. He got the bonus off, Dana White, because it was such a fuck up. And what can we say? It was announced yesterday that he's fighting Scott Jorgensen, one of the top guys in the bantamweight division, which is an absolute, it's a good gesture from the UFC, and you know, it speaks where John is at in his game at the moment. He's going to fight Scott Jorgensen at UFC on Fox 5 in December. So we're all delighted for him, and that's going to be on the main card, obviously, as well, because Scott's fought some of the best guys in the division.
Yeah, that ain't
absolutely
no...
Absolutely incredible
fight. That ain't no gesture. That guy, like, you know...
It says a lot from the UFC.
He really does deserve that fight, and Jorgensen's a top, top talent. And...
if you look at Jorgensen's record, man, it's fucking crazy. He's lost,
it's like, title, interim, fucking...
interim, everything. Yeah. Like, Jose Aldo, Uriah... Look, all these fucking mad fighters, man. So it's such a good fight for him, and I'm delighted for him because he's such a nice
guy. He's a lovely bloke. He's really dead
nice guy. Real nice guy. So
should we talk to him?
No.
No?
I want to talk to you for a few more.
Oh, cool. I never thought I'd hear those words.
Okay. Listen, we caught up with John Albert earlier on. John Prince Albert, who is making his return to the Octagon in December. Is that right, Mark?
It's December 8th, I think. No,
December 8th on that fucking massive card.
Oh, it's crazy.
UFC on Fox 5 with Rory McDonald and BJ and everything else.
But yeah, no, I think this is the one where they're giving back to Fox and they're giving the super card and they're doing it well.
It's going to be incredible. So listen, take a listen to the interview with John Albert and we'll get back to you in a few minutes after you have listened to that. Thanks, guys.
This is UFC's Andy Ogle and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined on the line by John Prince Albert, who was announced yesterday to be facing off against Scott Jorgensen at UFC on Fox 5 in December. John, obviously, yesterday was obviously just announced. How did it come about, and how pleased are you with the fact that you'd be fighting on a Fox card in December?
Yeah, I'm pretty ecstatic. Like, I couldn't believe I was put on this card. I mean, it's in my hometown in Seattle, Washington. I'm fighting a top-ranked fighter in the world, you know, a great matchup, and I get a fight on the card with people like BJ Penn, Rory McDonald, Ben Henderson, Nate Diaz. Like, this is the best card of the year, and I get to be a part of it, and it's in my hometown. Like, I feel pretty blessed right now, pretty lucky.
Had there been much plotting on your part for this fight? Had you been studying Scott Jorgensen in any way? Was there much organization on your part, or was it just brought in front of you?
You know, I don't know. We definitely pushed for the fight a lot. My coach didn't. We actually tried to get on the August 11th card because they need the space filled, but, I mean, it was too short notice.
Yeah.
I've always had a feeling that I'd fight Scott Jorgensen one day, and, you know, it just kind of came into fruition. Like, it was pretty unreal.
And how... obviously, Scott Jorgensen, one of the top guys in the division. What are you working on towards that fight? Obviously, you're going to start your camp now, but what do you reckon you'll need to put in the bag to beat Scott Jorgensen?
Well, he's made his name through wrestling and ground and pound, but as he's progressed, he's really worked on his striking, you know, and he kind of gets stuck in that brawler mode where I feel like I could truly beat him, like, hands down. Whereas, like, he just likes to stand and bang, and I think that'll be the worst place for him to be with me, you know? So I'm going to try to keep it on my feet. If he takes me down, which I don't think he'll want to, I could sub him pretty easy, too, because I think my game off my back is pretty slick, you know, and he puts a lot of pressure, and that really works into my game. So, I mean, I'm pretty dangerous in both areas, and I feel like I can win in both areas, you know, but he's just got phenomenal cardio, you know, and his pace is unrelenting, so I'm definitely going to be kicking up my cardio and, you know, working at a pace where I can match his and keep it for 15 minutes, because that's where he grinds people, you know, he grinds them down and just beats the hell out of them, and I'm going to make sure he can't do that to me.
And, John, obviously your last fight against Eric Perez in the Ultimate Fighter 15 finale, Kim Wimslow made an absolutely, probably the worst decision I've ever seen from a referee in my life. How pissed off, and what was your reaction? I know you got the bonus off Dana White, but that, you know, on a personal and moral level, how pissed off are you with that decision at the end of the day?
I wasn't necessarily pissed. Like, obviously I was angry way after the fact, but I was literally in such shock. Like, I couldn't show emotion.
Yeah.
Like, I couldn't believe, because, I mean, there's so many things going through my head. Like, she just, you know, she hurt my record. She ruined my reputation. You know, I'm not going to get a win bonus. I'm going to get cut from the UFC. Mm. I had so many things going through my head, you know, off a simple mistake, you know. And so I let it go. I'm not too worried about it anymore, you know, because I always try to look ahead, because I want people to remember me for my wins and not my losses, yeah. You know. But I got a lot of good backing. I got a lot of good people always telling me, like, they know that call was bull crap, and, you know, they still like to watch me fight, and, you know, that kind of stuff is just such a great motivator, and it really helps get me past that, you know. I mean, because when you're doing it by yourself, it sucks. But when you got hundreds or thousands of people saying, you know, that was crap, we know you're good, we want to see you in there again, it really, really helped me get
motivates you.
That bad call.
John, you've been training with Victory Athletics for a good few years now, and under Dennis Holman. What do you feel that camp has really added to your game since you did? You came from a predominantly wrestling base, didn't you?
Yeah. Well, I wrestled in junior high. My little brother wrestled in high school, and but that's what our game is. It's submission wrestling. We go out there and we grind it out. And you know, I'm trained with one of the guys who has some of the most experience in MMA. You know, he's truly taught me how to be tough. You know, he taught me to fight, you know, and fight hard and like kind of just never give up and not be afraid to fight, you know, because I mean, I had 15 amateur fights and now 10 pro fights plus the two on the Ultimate Fighter. So that's close. I'm getting close to 25, 30 fights, you know, and that's just something that was instilled in us, is to not be afraid to fight. You know, and I think I show that, you know. You get a lot of guys in practice who are just phenomenal practice guys. Oh, can slap on submissions, or, oh, man, they spar so well, or, oh, they hit mitts so good. And then they go to fight, and they can't use that skill set in a fight because, like, they're just too antsy or too afraid. Whereas, like, I feel like I'm better in a fight than I am in practice because I'm not afraid to fight.
And obviously having Dennis in your corner is a huge advantage because he's, you know, obviously a veteran of the UFC and Strikeforce. What sort of advice would Dennis give you? And obviously going into the Ultimate Fighter show as well, how much of an advantage was that on your part to have Dennis in your corner along the way?
It's actually kind of funny because you know, I've been tweeting quite a bit and talked to people about game plans, and like, we don't necessarily have a game plan. My strong suit, he feels, is my ground game, and he tells me every fight to go out there, take the guy down, and submit him. But he knows I like to enjoy all parts of mixed martial arts. I love banging. I love striking. So all he ever says to me is karate. He says, do karate. That's what he tells me every time. And that's our game plan, is to do karate, because we enjoy fighting. And we just, in any aspect, on the feet, on the ground, we feel we're dominant. So it's like, there's no game plan. There's no, I'm gonna run from this guy, or I'm only going to step left, or I'm only going to throw this. It's like, I'm going to go out there and do what I do. I'm going to put the pressure. I'm going to be the one in charge of the fight, you know, so I don't ever have to worry about what someone else is doing. I mean, that's how I feel about mixed martial arts. I feel like you should always be progressing and be the best mixed martial artist. Don't be just a wrestler. Don't be just a striker. Be the best everywhere, because in case you don't, I'm getting outstruck, I'm going to have to take it to the ground, you know? So I'm just not afraid in any position, and there's never a game plan. It's just karate.
And obviously, Dennis, you were on The Ultimate Fighter 14, Coming off The Ultimate Fighter and, you know, stepping in back into the making your proper, you know, UFC debut, how much of a difference was that without the cameras in your face? And have you learned a lot as well with the guys that, you know, obviously Bisping and Miller were the coaches? Did you learn a lot in the camp as well?
Yeah, you know, I learned a lot more about myself and what it takes to be a professional athlete. You know, I was a professional. I fought my regional circuit in Washington, Oregon. You know, I've never ventured farther out than that. You know, and the show broadened my horizon as a martial artist, like seeing the level of these athletes. Like, those guys that came in on the show with me, there's maybe one or two guys that worked full-time like I did. I don't even think any of them did. I honestly think they're all full-time. And just their athleticism was way higher than mine. You know, their commitment to the sport was higher than mine, you know, and like, I was at a huge disadvantage right there. You know, my skill set was there, but just being an athlete, being a full-time pro fighter, I wasn't at their level, and that showed me that. You know, obviously I learned new skill sets, but like, it showed me the commitment I needed to take to compete. You gotta train like a world-class athlete to compete against world-class athletes, you know, and that's when I quit my job, trained full time, you know, and now I'm able to compete with those guys.
John, coming off a week of MMA madness, which has seen the whole concept of taking fights on short notice come to the forefront of the game, you took the Ivan Menjivar fight against Ivan, obviously a top fighter, on very short notice. How do you feel when you see someone like John Jones turning down the fight because you lost that fight? And do you feel that a bit of sympathy towards John?
You know what, my perspective, no, because he was contracted to fight on a set date, and yes, it was against an opponent, but he had an entire camp to fight on a date. That was his contractual contract, to fight on a certain date. He had a full camp, You know, and he's the, my thing is he's the champ. He's the number one fighter in that weight class.
Yeah.
So anybody that can step up, make weight, and challenge him for a fight, he should defend his belt against.
Yeah.
There should be no, as a champion, you should not be allowed to choose your opponent. You know, that is not your job. Your job is to simply defend the belt, simply prove you are the best in the world. That's what a champ does. I mean, that's what I would want to do as a champ.
Yeah.
I would want to say, I am the best in the world, and I'm not afraid to fight anybody. Whereas he showed he's afraid to fight without a game plan and all this crap. It's like he wasn't a true champion in my mind anymore. I was the biggest John Jones fan. Like, his skills are unbelievable. I think he's still one of the best fighters in the world, obviously, his skill set. But, like, mentally, it just, you know, because, I mean, that's how I'm trained. I'm trained to fight, you know.
Mm.
If you're in shape, there's no reason not to fight. Maybe if he was called on the short notice and he only had 8 days of training, of course he should be allowed to say no. But he had a full camp. He's the number one fighter in that weight class. Anybody that can step up and challenge him, he should fight, you know. I mean, he was offered Shogun. He was offered two fights before Chael, and then Chael was the only one that accepted it.
Yeah.
So I feel he should have accepted the fight and follow through his responsibility and his duty as a champion and defend that belt.
And John, if you in a similar situation had went to Dennis Hallman and asked his opinion, how much of the decision would fall on you and how much would fall on your coaches and your staff? Do you think that the decision of taking a fight should fall on the coaches? Is the respect so much in that position?
I could say it's 50-50 because, I mean, you choose your camp and you choose your coaches because of your trust in them.
Mm.
You know, they are building you as a martial artist, and so you trust them as your coach, your teacher, as a friend, you know, for what's best in, you know, your life, you think, you know, because that's why you're there. You know, you're not just training somewhere and making yourself the best. You know, you're trying to put yourself around people who are going to make you the best.
It's a team.
So you have to trust your coaches. But I mean, in the end, I think it comes down to you as a fighter, what you are willing to say as yourself as a fighter. Like, who am I as a fighter? What legacy am I going to leave behind? Am I going to leave it to my coaches, or am I going to make the decision myself? So, you know, it's kind of 50-50, but I think it comes down to the fighter, you know.
Cool.
And come UFC on Fox 5 in December, what sort of John Albert can we see, and what sort of outcome can we see against Scott Jorgensen?
Oh, man. Well, you're going to see a ferocious fighter, as always. You know, I come hard because, I mean, that's how I like to fight. That's what fans like to see. You know, people enjoy people that want to fight,
yeah.
You know. Everyone's told me, you know, maybe you should slow down, maybe you should pace yourself, you know, because, I mean, but that's not who I am. I like to go out there and just
exactly.
Give it my all, you know. And I feel that puts a lot of pressure on my opponent, you know, so that's hard for them to deal with, you know. But I feel like I think it's going to be a war. I mean, Jordan has shown he's super tough, like resilient.
Yeah,
he's
yeah.
only been finished once, and his only losses were to the interim title, the title, and a top 10 in the world, you know. So
that's it.
He's a phenomenal fighter, and it's just going to be a barn burner, I think.
Yeah,
I think I can end it on a seat pretty early, but I mean, I think it could also go to a decision.
Brilliant. Absolutely fantastic.
Is this your first time fighting in a really big fight in your hometown?
At a big event like this, yes, for the UFC. I fought, obviously, in my hometown. I fought in Tacoma Dome, which is a big stadium we have as an amateur. You know,
yeah.
I fought on the biggest local circuit we have.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it's nothing compared
yeah,
to the UFC.
UFC.
You know, when I fought in Omaha, there were 15,000 people, you know, and I'd never felt
Jeez,
that before.
Yeah.
Now I'm going to be in my hometown with like 20,000 people. This is going to be the biggest event I've ever fought for, on the biggest card I've ever fought for. It's going to be unreal.
You're going to have people coming out of the woodwork looking for tickets from nowhere.
You know what? I get that no matter what. You know, people go, hey, you got
can we have some tickets, please?
Yeah. Can you give me a discount? I'm just like, no, man, that's not. I have nothing to do with that. Just buy your ticket like everyone else.
Can we have two tickets, please?
I wish, man.
I think because we're out.
They do give us four tickets, but like it always goes to my family. I don't sell them. I don't put raffles.
You're a spoiler.
I just give them straight to my family.
Good man.
But listen, it's been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, John, and I hope everything goes really well for you in the future, and best of luck at UFC on Fox 5.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
We'll be vouching for you.
Thank you.
And that is John Albert, who will be fighting on the UFC Fox card on December 8th. Mark, what do you make of the that card. It's an absolutely fantastic fucking card. It's amazing.
It's an absolute barn burner. And like, we have our boy Eddie Egan, who's going to be fighting Dennis Seaver, which the fight that's just been rearranged, who we had on last week.
Top man, Eddie.
We had a great interview with him. Check it out in episode 5. And like, when you see that we have Chiesa having his first fight against Rafael Oliveira as well, and that's just the undercard. But when you see the BJ Penn Rory McDonald fight, I think people are really waiting for that. I think the Canadian public they really want to see McDonald and see what he can do against a top level veteran like BJ Penn.
To be honest, it's absolutely stacked card from top to bottom. The prelim card all the way up is amazing. And another fight I'm really looking forward to seeing is Gustafsson against Hua.
I know, I didn't even mention that, just because...
Yeah. the card's so big, you know what I mean? I know. It's amazing, like, it's a really good card. They're definitely making up from 149.
And Proctor's there as well.
Yeah, Proctor was very fucking aggressive in there.
What are you saying? They did something
on the
wrong
with show?
Are you saying they did something wrong at 149?
What? What happened at 149?
I don't remember.
I fall asleep?
I presume the exact same thing that happened with 151. Never happened. Deny the war.
John Jones.
Yeah, John Jones got his hand on 149 as well. That's
okay.
Wrong.
Listen, it's a top card.
Do you think, Niall, that this is the UFC's attempt to win back Fox now, to give them this big, this massive card now, five cards in, really? Do you think that this is a little bit, it's... They're too late with this grand gesture.
Obviously, we talked about UFC on Fox 4 before it happened. We thought it'd be a great card,
but that card got lucky. Really, it wasn't.
Though. It was going. It was always going to be.
It was a hardcore fan good card. It wasn't a Fox good card.
But that's it. Like, you know, you have to put on cards like that where people who know the hardcore sport know what good fights going to happen. Do you know what I mean? Like,
no, you don't.
You do, man. I knew. What did I say to you? What did I say on this podcast a few weeks ago? Before that fight, I said Lauzon Varner will be a fucking slobber knocker. That's my exact words. And was it or was it not?
No, but that's not what I mean. Not what I mean is the fact that when you're putting a fight on Fox, you're not putting it on for the hardcore fans. You're putting it on for the general public. It's nothing to do with the people.
They have to make fights that are gonna, you know, sell to the general public. And what fights do you put on? Are the slobber knockers? That's what people want to see, really, at the end of the day.
But if you put Shogun Henderson on a Fox card...
They would have loved that.
No, they wouldn't.
No, they didn't like the Silva thing because it was a lot of blood.
No, sorry. Yeah, I know, that's what I mean. If you put Shogun Henderson on a Fox card, what would have happened? They would have been disgusted and they would have said that's
disgusting. It's going to happen sooner or later. Let's not beat around the bush.
But that's the other argument, and I think that's a fair enough argument, that like, you shouldn't be trying to pretend and dress up the sport.
I'm a hardcore fan. I don't give a fuck what anyone says about the sport.
Fox
knew what they were getting when they signed up for this deal, right? Okay, that's the way I look at it. Dana White is right when he goes his press calls whatever to go tell everyone to go fuck themselves, because he is right.
Yeah,
he
but you built, have to pick the
he
right
built
fights.
That sport on the way they signed the fucking deal. Let's be honest about it.
Yeah, but they signed the fucking deal. But they signed the deal to get the right fights to put on the right times. And in fairness, they're dead right in the sense that.
Well, I'll tell you right in my opinion who got the 151 card call off. Probably Fox, because the amount of events they put on by giving the money that they have. And signed the deal. Card got stretched. That's why can we make
that? That's not
point?
It at all.
I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying that could be someone's opinion. It's looking that way.
No, but like the person who got 151 like cancelled was the fact that they're trying to UFC
yes,
are trying to put on
John Jones. We do.
They're stretching their
John
card
Jones
way
was,
too thin.
John Jones was you know.
No, it wasn't. Like, I blame the UFC before John Jones still.
I don't, because you're a champion. At the end of the
well,
day,
I know I'm a champion,
book,
but...
No, Book, listen, shut up. Book stops here. If you're a champion...
Well, I am a champion.
No, not you, you fucking clown.
What?
If you're a champion, like... You,
I am.
You're a belt holder, and you don't hold any belts. You've the belt in your trousers.
I do, it's worth it this year.
Right, if you're a champion of an organisation...
Right?
Right, Mark, stop, okay? If you're... A title holder, your belt there. It stands for so much more than just being a belt. It
holding
stands for the person you are, the way you conduct yourself, everything about it. You're a champion. You'll take anyone on in your weight division. And John Jones wasn't willing to do that.
But where's that written?
Listen, that is written in, like, it's an unwritten rule.
That's but what's an unwritten rule?
Listen, mate, we all fucking know it. At the end of the fucking day, we all know that.
But how do we know it?
Because it's just things...
Because we've all bullshitted to each other about it?
No, mate, I would take on anyone. And everyone has said it. A lot of guys have said it. You take on anyone to defend your belt. John Jones saw something he might be beaten and backed out.
Is that not just tactical?
What a fucking idiot. He's lost millions of dollars in sponsorship and... Sorry, I think John Jones has went a bit mad lately. I've said this before in the podcast. I think the whole beard thing and you know the DUI, it all sort of... Like, I always backed... I had a good lot of time for Rashad Evans.
Do you want to know my weird one? I was just playing devil's advocate there again, just trying to piss you off with it. But I do think that there is a very strong case, and you're dead right about that, in the sense that what was the worst thing that could have happened to John Jones if he took the fight? The worst thing that could have happened is that he'd lost it. And if he'd lost to Chael Sonnen, that would have created the greatest, the most expensive... He would have made more money from that rematch than any other fight he would ever have in his entire life. That fight would have become his pension times 1,000. And he had nothing to lose at any stage there. People talk about legacy, and legacy is just a word which is bandied about because legacy doesn't exist.
But he's no legacy now.
Technically,
legacy does exist. It does.
What's legacy? Legacy means he hasn't lost.
But effectively, he has lost.
He hasn't.
In his mind, he's lost. The public have lost.
Yeah, but in his mind, doesn't get written in books.
Listen to me. The public have everyone. This will always go down now in UFC history, mixed martial arts history. The guy did refuse to fight someone. That's what he did. The champion refused to fight someone coming at a lower weight class than he was.
Niall, the winner of the war writes the history book.
Listen, I don't give a shit, man. If you're a bigger guy, you'll fight a smaller guy.
But
simple as that. I don't give a fuck what you say. Is he the UFC light heavyweight champion or not?
But
step up. Face the mark, don't let the promotion down. They're the guy that fuck. Don't bite the hand that feeds you. And I guarantee you, he'll probably have a shit career now for the rest of his life. Cause
he won't have a shit career.
The guy's gone over his head, man. He's got grown a beard.
Is not the problem.
The guy has serious bad head issues. That's what I reckon. To be honest with you,
if you're going to say...
Out there, Belfort could put a right hand to his face and could knock him out.
No.
In the first
you
round.
You are not... I'm standing in the bookies while you put that tenor on.
I'm not going to put on any on. I'm just saying the way I think Jones is seriously the guy's 23 years old. What age am I? 29. You're 20 what?
28.
The guy has
fame
in such a short space of time. The guy's lost it and all that stuff. He's like.
Do you not think that he's just smart?
He's like a young Georgie Best, man. That he's lost.
No, he's not. He's not an alcoholic. He's not
What did he say?
He's too overly clued in.
Man, you haven't listened to the shit.
I've listened to everything times seven.
You listened before the Rashad Evans fight. The whole Jackson stuff on the TV. Oh, I'm such a good guy with God and all this. The guy starts growing a beard then and starts...
What's the beard got to do?
Rashad, it doesn't matter. I'm saying, as the old saying goes, once someone grows a beard, you're hiding something behind yourself.
Well, anyway, that's true.
Right. He grew the beard and then Evans was going to... that was after the fight, but Evans before the fight said, slated him and started going, you're basically, everything you say is just absolute bullshit. He does play up for the cameras. He does.
But everyone plays up for the cameras.
No,
so does Rashad.
Listen. He says, I'm such a righteous guy, all this sort of shit. That's what he goes on about. He practices what he preaches? No, he preaches what he can't practice.
I'd say practices what he
preaches. Whatever, I don't care. What anything, I don't know. But listen, beware of Belfort. That's all I'm going to say. Moving on. Sorry, I can't talk about it anymore. I'm getting annoyed.
We've been in here since 6, genuinely, guys. So that's about... we've been here 8
it's
hours?
Well, it's 2 o'clock
10
in the
hours?
Morning. 2 o'clock in the morning.
6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11...
It's all your fault.
That's not. See, if everyone was as cool and suave as me...
If you read your notes properly, we wouldn't be here.
I think you forget
that... I'm joking,
Mark. I lost my notes on my way here, and they all actually became obsolete last night when Frankie Edgar moved into the Aldo position, so... we're going on to an interview with
Suarez!
Aaron Suarez!
We caught up with Ed earlier on today, and Ed was absolutely great to give us his time. And we caught up with Ed about everything that's gone on the last sort of couple of weeks of his fighters and when the Nogs are going to come back. Obviously, he used to manage Jose Aldo before. And
he did, yeah.
Yeah, did he?
He only finished in February, I think.
We're getting into that with him. And see, we're basically, everything's going to Brazilian boys, and we'll be back in a few minutes. So I hope you enjoy the interview with Ed Soares. Gracias, amigos. That's not even Portuguese, but enjoy the interview. Thanks, guys.
Gracias, boom.
Boom.
This is the Crippler Chris Leben, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined by Ed Soares, one of the top mixed martial arts agents in the world.
Ed, with all the rumours going about with Anderson Silva being proposed to step in on short notice to save the 151 card, did you have to suggest that idea to him?
No, not at all. Anderson basically called me when he found out that day was last Thursday. He called me at the end of the day because he was busy doing a bunch of media campaigns and stuff in Brazil. He called me and he said, "Hey, Ed, is this true that they're canceling UFC 151? And I said, "Yeah, they canceled it today because they couldn't get a fight." And he says, "Listen, Ed, call Dana and tell him I'm not in fighting shape right now. I can't fight at 185 because I wouldn't be able to make weight in 8 days. But let him know that if he needs me to step in to save the event, I'm willing to step in to save the event. And of course, I'm not prepared to fight John Jones because, you know, he's the champ, but I definitely, if there's anyone else at 205 pounds that would accept the fight, and if they can save the event, I'd save the event." And his biggest worry of everything was really all the other fighters that unfortunately weren't able to get paid, because, you know, he says that it wasn't long ago where he remembers, you know, these guys weren't making a ton of money. He was in that same position, and whether him fighting or not, it meant, you know, how he's going to provide for his family. So he felt bad for the other 22 fighters on the card that weren't able to make money, and he was willing to step up and take that burden.
Ed, do you find that Dana and the boys trying to continuously put together these super fights of top champions, the greatest fighters of different divisions against each other, do you find that that takes away from building just one really strong division?
No, I don't, because, I mean, relatively speaking, I mean, when you think about Anderson Silva, he's cleaned out his division. George St. Pierre has basically cleaned out his division.
Yeah.
There's a lot of talk going back and forth about who pound for pound is the best fighter. So I think it makes sense to meet at a catchweight. That way it's not affecting either one's legacy. Because if Anderson was to come down and fight George St. Pierre and beat George St. Pierre, that would take away what George St. Pierre has done. If George St. Pierre was to move up in weight and beat Anderson, it would take away what Anderson's done. So I think a meeting at a catchweight, I mean, there's no doubt in my mind that George St. Pierre is one of the greatest welterweights of all time. And Anderson Silva is considered to be the best middleweight of all time. Some considered to be the best fighter of all time. Some people considered George to be the greatest fighter of all time. So I think that if you take a neutral weight, like a catch weight, and make it a super fight, it really doesn't affect either one's legacy.
And obviously with Lyoto as well, turning down the fight, saying he wasn't ready in time. Where does Lyoto go from here?
Well, I think we made the right choice. I mean, Lyoto earned that chance to fight for the title. And what ends up happening is that, you know, he earned that right. And this is the second time he fought he's going to fight John Jones. So traditionally, you look at our sport, and any guy who's lost to a champion in one weight division twice has to reinvent himself and possibly move division. So in Lyoto's mind, he believes that he can still be the light heavyweight champion of the world. So if he's going to take this second chance and fight John Jones, he wants to make sure that he's 100% when he fights him, because if he has to reinvent himself and move weight categories, at least he wants to reinvent himself and move weight categories, knowing that he went into the fight with his best foot forward, giving his 100%. I think that would be a huge thorn in his side for the rest of his life, or for just about anybody who would take a fight knowing that they're not 100%, and then they have to sit there and reinvent themselves and move weight divisions.
Does Lyoto and Anderson, in a similar situation such as that, do they turn to you for advice, or do they turn to the coaches? Who are the main people? Do you think it's right for Jackson to be advising John Jones, and a coach to be the voice of influence at the end of the day?
I think everybody has their own position. I think it's just as much of a right for Greg Jackson to give his comments, because at the end of the day, I'm a manager, I'm not a coach. So I think what we need to do is we need to, every situation is different, and I think that at the end of the day, it's the fighter's choice. The coach can say what he wants, the manager can say what he wants, and the way I look at it is the coach is there and the manager's there to help the fighter navigate through his career. At the end of the day, the fighter is the captain of his own ship. We're just there to help him navigate his ship. At the end of the day, he has to make the choice. We're just there to try to advise him. So do I think that Greg Jackson should not give his advice? I think it's very important for Greg Jackson to give his advice.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, the fighter has to make the final choice.
And obviously, Ed, as someone who's been in such close quarters with Aldo in the past, how do you feel he's going to get on against a fighter such as Frankie Edgar?
Well, like I said, we don't work with Jose Aldo anymore. We don't manage him.
Yeah.
But I think that it's a great fight. I think it's a fight that I'm very excited to watch. I think it's definitely the biggest fight possible for Jose Aldo. And I think it's the best fight possible. I think the fans are the ones that are winning on this one, because I think that Frankie Edgar is a much better opponent against Jose Aldo, and it's a much more exciting fight, I believe, than the Koch fight. As a matter of fact, this morning I texted Dana saying, man, I can't wait for this fight.
Yeah.
I'm really excited about this fight. And he texted me back saying, me too. So I think it's a great fight. I think Jose Aldo has everything to beat Frankie Edgar, but I definitely think that this is going to be the most difficult fight in Jose Aldo's career.
Do you advise Dana at all on how to market a fight properly in Brazil?
I wouldn't say I'd advise Dana on anything. We definitely have conversations, and I voice my opinion on certain things. But at the end of the day, I think, you know, Dana and his staff. I think Dana and his staff of people. You know, he's got a good group of people around him, and when it's a necessity, I don't really advise Dana on anything. You know, I may give him my opinion.
Oh, no, I suppose just new opinion.
Advising Dana, I don't think I advise Dana on anything. I try to, at the end of the day, we're all on the same team. We're here to make the sport grow and try to do the best that we can and make the sport keep growing. So, you know, I think Dana values my opinion the same way I value his, but at the end of the day, I think he for the most part, he always does the right thing.
And with the Nogueira brothers, especially, when can we expect to see these guys back in the octagon?
Oh, the Nogueira brothers.
Yeah,
I believe that you'll be seeing them by the end of the year, if not early next year.
Absolutely brilliant, Ed. Just one more question for you. What do you think of the whole 151 situation, and what's your general opinion on it with John Jones and the whole Jackson camp? Do you believe the event should have been cancelled or?
No, my opinion is I believe John Jones should have took the fight with Chael Sonnen. Once again, that's just my opinion. Each fighter in each camp has their own reasons for doing what they had to do. But I believe that it was a very sad day for our industry.
Yeah.
To see that the UFC had to cancel an event. And, you know, that's just my opinion. You know, I'm sure that Jones's camp and himself would argue that, and I respect their decision, but I believe that he should have taken the fight with Chael Sonnen, and I believe that this Saturday night we should be watching UFC 151. That's my opinion.
And obviously, just to wrap it up now, we obviously know, obviously with at UFC 148, yourself and Chael didn't get on too well. Do you believe some of the mind games Chael plays might have got to the John Jones camp?
Yeah, it might have. You know, I'm not very close to John Jones. I like John Jones as a person, as a fighter. He's a great fighter. I'm not really too sure how the Chael Sonnen antics have affected John Jones, but obviously it must have affected him.
Ed, I'd like to thank you very much for coming on the line. I appreciate your time greatly, and I hope everything goes well for you in the future.
No problem, man. Take care.
And that was Ed Suarez, manager of some of the elite mixed martial artists in the world, including Anderson Silva, the Nog brothers, and formerly of Jose Aldo. And it was good to have Ed's thoughts on, you know, how Frankie's going to get on against his former client. Jose Aldo in the featherweight title fight in USC 153. Mark, what's your opinions on that?
Yeah, I think when you've had anyone who's managed someone and worked that closely alongside them for so long, it's always interesting to see their take on a fight, because I think they're always going to be part of their mind, and they know the way things are going to go.
And what way is that fight going to go for you? Because I can see Frankie taking that down.
I desperately want Frankie. I'm a massive Frankie Edgar fan, but I still see those leg kicks of Aldo. I still think Aldo having a huge chance. I think there's more chance of Aldo finishing it than there is. I don't think Edgar is going to finish the fight. And I don't think it's going to get to a decision. So possibly I might give it to Aldo. And I know that's a bit dislikable kind of opinion, but
fair enough. It's just a call. It's your opinion, yeah. So it's probably not the right opinion as we.
It probably is, because it's Mark Elation. You know,
and guys, as well, obviously we want you to get in contact with the show, so you can find us at Talking Brawls on Twitter and at Mark Moriarty 101 and at Niall McGrath 4, and you can find us on Facebook at Facebook.com/TalkingBrawls at Facebook.com, is that right?
Yeah, Facebook.com, isn't it? Yeah,
I think so, something like that. Yeah. And you can find us on TalkingBrawls@gmail.com. So get involved, guys, because we're going to have some pretty good shit coming up in the next few weeks and some good prizes and things like that. And during the week, it's been a pretty tough week in the mixed martial arts world for everyone involved. It's been a bit of a sad week as well. Would you not say that, Mark? A little bit depressing with the whole thing went on 151. But there's been a lot of positive things. And that's what we want to bring to you guys, the positive shit. There's been one FC. Think about it, guys. It's not all doom and gloom. Let's cheer up and get the vibe going up a little bit, you know. Battle Zone as well. Our own promotion here. We got contact by these guys this week. Battle Zone and a guy called Philip Mulpeter, which is a top fighter. He fought in cage contenders before. If anyone's wary of that competition, on Standard Sports, which is an Irish sports station, which used to be worldwide,
which works out of the UK as well. Yeah,
and we are covering an event for Battle Zone next weekend, which I can't wait to do.
Yeah.
Myself and yourself are covering both out in Swords next weekend, so it's we're going to put a little bit of slant on the show as well.
It's pretty much the Vegas of Ireland,
closer to home. But at the end of the day, we're still going to bring you all the big fucking hard time guests as well, such as someone we have on in a second, Damon Martin from MMAweekly.com.
Well, technically he's also from Ireland, isn't he?
Oh, down the road from me.
Shit.
Mark. No, it was weird. Like, let's tell the guys a story.
Pull back the curtain.
We got on to Damon today, and we went, Damon, would you come on our show tonight to give us an interview? So I went. Obviously, I know Damon as well because I follow him on Twitter and stuff like that. And you should all follow me on Twitter. No, I'm at four. Whatever.
No, you don't tell the story of the Twitter. Bro.
Okay, sorry. I'm sorry. But we tweeted Damon anyway, and Damon said, "Yeah, no problem, mate. Absolutely amazing." And we talked to Damon before the show and after the show for about 10 minutes after the show, and we had literally run it for about an hour and a half, I'd say. And Damon revealed to me that he was from Dundrum. And I'm actually originally from Churchtown, which is literally 5 minutes walking distance, which is pretty fucked up. And Damon, obviously, his insight's amazing to the mixed martial arts world, gets a lot of exclusive interviews and things like that. So, it was great to catch up with Damon. And we did catch up with Damon. Yeah.
But now, people, you also know why Damon actually moved to the US of A.
Fuck you. You're a dickhead.
Oh.
But listen, we really like to thank Damon, a top man, and that's why we've decided to leave the best interview to last today. Damon Martin, thanks a million, MMAweekly.com. Love yous all. Take it easy. We'll leave you out with this interview. Cheers.
Hey guys, this is Ian McCall, UFC flyweight, and you're listening to Talking Brawls.
Delighted to say we're joined online by Damon Martin of MMAweekly.com. Damon, obviously, has been messed up 24 hours for the mixed martial arts world, with Frankie Edgar stepping in instead of the injured Eric Koch to face Jose Aldo at UFC 153 in Brazil. What are your opinions on that, and what's the general consensus and feeling in the United States?
Well, I mean, it's unfortunate that Eric Koch got injured, but at the same time, let's not fool ourselves in thinking that Eric Koch was, Eric Koch's a great fighter, let me make that clear, but the problem is he was not a clear-cut number one contender, simply because there is no clear-cut number one contender at 145 pounds. So Frankie Edgar stepping in right now, again, honestly, this is a bigger fight. This is a fight I think a lot of people wanted to see. I think the only downside is you know, it's happening on short notice, but hopefully, you know, Frankie is 100% prepared. Obviously, I believe he will be since he took the fight. And I'm more excited for this fight now than I was, you know, 24 hours ago. And that's no offense to Eric Koch.
Definitely. And obviously with Frankie coming down a weight to featherweight, I'm a great believer that Frankie won the last fight against Benson Henderson. There was a lot of other good fights, I think. You could have. He's one of the few guys that walks around at his weight and fights at his weight. Do you think like someone like Pettis or Lozon or Varner that could have faced Frankie and sort of keep him at division, maybe have a rubber match with Henderson would have been the right idea for the UFC? Or are they just going down the division because there's very little competition to face Aldo?
Well, I mean, I think it's a combination, honestly. I think Frankie is one of those guys who wants to be at the top of the division, and I think he knew as long as Benson Henderson held the title that he was going to be stuck. You know, without fighting for the title again. So I think dropping down to 145, you know, he knew going into this that he was probably one fight away from a title shot. Mm. The rumors I had heard were going to be December, and he was likely to face either Ricardo Lamas or the Korean Zombie, Chan Sung Jung. The winner of that fight would have been the next person to face Jose Aldo. So Frankie's just a champion's mind. He wants to be a champion at all times, exactly. And I think he got a little burnt out on some bad decisions against Benson Henderson. I agree. I felt he won the second fight as well. And he wants to be at the top, so this is an opportunity to be right back at the top.
Damien, do you think that this is the best way that Dana and the boys could have played it, in the sense that the pay-per-views which are on in Brazil never usually sell well in the States? The pay-per-view buys are usually fairly low. Do you think that getting a real barn burner of a card with having someone like Edgar's in a super fight, a proper super fight, is the only way he could have played it to do any business in the States?
Yeah, it absolutely is. You're absolutely right. Because the other option in this fight would have been Ricardo Lamas. For those that don't know, the Korean Zombie is injured right now. He had surgery. He's going to be out until probably November or December. There's no way he would have been ready. The other choice would have been Ricardo Lamas. And I like Ricardo Lamas. I do. People would argue he's higher ranked. You know, he actually has had some big wins at featherweight. But Ricardo Lamas isn't going to sell a big fight, and he's just not a well-known name. Frankie Edgar, on the other hand, has sold pay-per-views. He's very, very well-known, and I actually think his fan base grew after the bad decision with Benson Henderson. So they needed this kind of fight, especially, and you mentioned the big card in Brazil. Let's not forget, they also lost Vitor Belfort off that card in the last week.
Exactly.
So they needed a big fight, and they needed Frankie Edgar.
And how do you think Frankie, obviously he's going to be cutting weight probably for the first time in his career because he's a natural sort of lightweight fighter. How do you think Frankie will cope with dropping the extra pounds, and can you see it being an advantage for him? I know Aldo's gone in as the favorite with the bookmakers in the States. How can you see the fight going?
You know, I mean, I think Frankie will be okay. I mean, Frankie walks around at about 158, 159 pounds typically. He's cutting very little weight to get down to a lightweight. I don't think it'll be a bad cut for him. I had a chance to talk to Frankie right after he made the decision, and he told me that, you know, he'll have to cut 10 or 11 pounds, but he's a wrestler. He's been doing this his whole career, so it won't be that big of a deal for him. And, you know, I mean, I guess the interesting factor will be, you know, does Frankie Edgar translate to 145? And what I mean by that is one of the biggest advantages he had at 155 was his quickness, his speed, his footwork. You know, can that adapt to 145 where the guys are smaller and faster and quicker? So I guess that's the biggest question. The biggest question for me in this fight is, can he avoid Aldo's power? Because Aldo has some very tremendous power in his hands, his knees, and his kicks. And let's not fool ourselves here. When they face off, and everybody will notice it in October, Jose Aldo is still going to have a pretty sizable advantage over Frankie Edgar. So the key is, can Frankie Edgar fight his fight and stick to that without getting caught by one of Jose's you know, big punches or kicks?
Tiny bit of a silly question, but since you were talking to Edgar, do you think was Edgar's, did he jump or was he pushed? And did he have this in his mindset, and could he see it in his foresight already?
Well, I'll tell you this. Frankie told me flat out, because I did ask him, I said, you know, did Dana White influence your decision at all? And he flat out said no. He knew that's what Dana wanted. You know, he knew that that's what's been suggested. But, you know, Dana has said many times they don't tell fighters what weight class to fight at. And Frankie backed that up by saying he never, after their fight, he actually didn't have a conversation with Dana about it. He just decided this was the best course of action for right now. Again, I think a lot of it, I mean, the pressure had come at Frankie from a lot of angles of this was the better weight class, but I really truly believe this was more about the challenge for Frankie, because I know he wants to be the best guy in the world. He's been the best at lightweight. He knew he wasn't going to get a lightweight title shot anytime, probably within the next year. But in this case, here we are, you know, a week after he makes the decision, and he's in a title fight again.
Yeah,
it's Chael Sonnen all over again.
Yeah, exactly.
The smack talking Edgars.
It's kind of frustrating. I'm a big Frankie Edgar fan, and you know, after seeing the Henderson fight, I thought he won the fight, but that's it's obviously goes into judges. But moving on for Frankie, does he or does he not influence himself in that division, or is he going to stick around that division even if he wins the title? Realistically, because there isn't that much competition. Let's be honest.
At 145, you mean?
Yes.
Yeah, you know, and that's absolutely true. There's not a lot of competition at 145. I was actually talking to a manager earlier today, and I said that you know, I feel like 145, while there are some good fighters out there, it's not a deeply established division. Frankie told me when I talked to him that he said, you know, he wouldn't mind being the Dan Henderson of 145 and 155, because you know, a lot of people, and myself included, and it sounds like you guys as well, that, you know, Frankie beat Benson Henderson that last
100%.
Time. And so let's also put this in context. If he beats Jose Aldo, and let's say he maybe defends the title one time against, you know, maybe the Korean Zombie, which would be a big fight. You know, you look at, let's say Nate Diaz beats Benson Henderson, and then maybe he fights one more time. I mean, who's, and there's a great storyline built in there, because, you know, this is Frankie's chance at redemption at lightweight. And also, you know, you have the family connection, because Frankie trains with Renzo Gracie. Obviously, Nate Diaz is a student of Cesar Gracie. So there's a lot of storyline built in there. So I wouldn't discount the fact that Frankie Edgar could be back at lightweight sometime in the next 12 months.
And obviously, moving on to a different story, Renzo Gracie, obviously he was at 1FC this morning. How do you think, obviously, two of the Gracies won there in the cards? What do you make of 1FC, and what can you see in the future for 1FC, Damon?
You know, I really like 1FC. I've gotten the chance to get to know the CEO, Victor Cooley, pretty well over the last 6 months. And they have a great business plan. And their business plan is to expand slowly but surely throughout Asia. They've got some major corporate sponsors on board throughout Asia. Sony, Gillette. You know, they've had some very big sponsors that took the UFC years to land in the United States. But people are more willing to take a chance with them in Asia. And I think they're doing good. You know, they're slow but sure. They're not trying to go out and make a big payday and sign guys away from the UFC or make a splash in that way. What they're wanting to do is kind of what Pride did. You know, they'll put on a few fights that will interest the international crowd, like today with the Arlovski-Sylvia fight, and throwing on some names that, you know, we here in the States or other places will recognize. But ultimately, they're going to build local talent. I mean, they've got a kid, he's not local, but he's from Brazil, but they've got a kid fighting on the next card in October by the name of Zoro Babel Moreira. For people that don't remember, he was the guy that soccer kicked Roger Huerta.
Yes, that was a crazy soccer kick, yeah.
Yeah, this kid is extremely talented, very, very talented kid. So this is, I think, they're slowly building into a name brand to take over Asia. And I'm telling you what, right now, they're going to be around for a long time to come.
It's a great setup. I watched it there this morning, obviously, in Ireland. But do you think with the promotion, like, they're getting too many old sort of, you know, folk in, and obviously Jens lost again today. Is that the end of the road for Jens Pulver?
You know, I've been lucky enough to know Jens for the better part of about 8 years now, and I like Jens very much personally and professionally. He's a great guy.
Very good guy.
But what's happening now is it's just I'm starting to get scared for his health. I'm starting to get scared for his long-term you know, his family. I mean, you know, like I said, this is a guy who he's fought all the battles he needs to fight. He doesn't need to fight anymore. But I will say this, and I've said this time over time, it's no one's business to tell anybody when they should retire.
Exactly.
But for a safety concern, you just hate to see a guy like that go down You know, and this is a guy, you know, Jens Pulver, who always goes down swinging. You know, it's not that he's losing by submission and he really needs to work on his jiu-jitsu game. You know, he's getting knocked out or knocked down a lot, and that's when you start getting into some scary stuff.
Yeah, and we've had Jens on the past, and I'd like to hollow as we're the absolute gentleman as well to have on the show as well.
I must say, do you feel that now that the Eastern mixed martial arts community, with the whole focus going over to the Philippines now, do you think it's dead in Japan now? Is it completely gone now?
You know, I hate to say anything is ever completely dead, because there are still people in Japan that would like to put on big MMA events there. Unfortunately, there's just been so much corruption in Japanese MMA over the last decade that it's tough. I mean, it's just a tough sell right now to get people involved when, you know, I'll just tell you the honest truth. The stories I've heard and been told by my sources of promotions or shows that were going to happen in Japan, every single time that one of those shows is brought up to me by a manager or another source, it's the same names that we heard back in the day with Pride or Dream or some of these other organizations. And the problem is those names almost always have a taint to them because they were associated with organized crime or some other thing. Yeah. So, you know, that's the problem. It's going to take new blood. It's going to take somebody willing to really put an influx of some serious money, some sort of Japanese business folks. To really bring it back alive. I honestly don't think we'll see big-time MMA in Japan for the next 2 to 3 years, probably. And even then, if it does happen, it's going to be an organization like ONE FC bringing a show to Japan or the UFC bringing a show to Japan. I don't think we're going to see another major organization pop up anytime soon.
So you think ONE FC are going to stick around that long and be a major force in Asia, obviously, with Victor Kui heading the organization?
Yeah, I mean, anything can happen. I'll say that. Anything can happen. I've been surprised before, but right now I just don't see any surprises.
Yeah.
So, obviously, with our kind of excitement starting to slowly wane ahead of UFC 151, the UFC pay-per-view, which will be lost to pub quizzes everywhere, how do you feel about the 152 card now?
You know, I'm really excited about UFC 152. I mean, again, let's be honest, Vitor Belfort stepping in against John Jones, he's going to be a huge underdog, and I get that. And of course, my pick in the fight will be John Jones. But Vitor is a legend. He's always a guy that goes out there to fight, so it's interesting. The fight that I'm most excited about, honestly, is the flyweight title fight between Joseph Benavidez and Demetrius Johnson. I had a chance to talk to both of those guys this week. They're very amped up. The chances of this one not going five rounds and being a crazy exciting fight are pretty slim. And then I think you're going to get a great stand-up fight with Michael Bisping and Brian Stann. Again, anything can happen, but if I was a betting man, I would not bet on this fight to hit the ground unless one of them literally falls down. it's a top-heavy card. I mean, let's be honest. It's a top-heavy card because I think the best fights are the top three. But you know what? It's a solid card. I'm excited. I'm excited for that card coming up.
And who's going to take the fights in your eyes?
You know, John Jones, I do believe John Jones is going to win. I just think he's too much for Vitor. You know, Vitor is really, he truly is a middleweight now, and I just don't like his chances. I love the fact that he stepped up, but I don't see him winning. In the flyweight fight, you know, I have to go with Joseph Benavidez. I think Joseph, in my opinion, was the number two bantamweight in the world when he left the division. So for him to go down to 125, I think he's going to be a great champion there. The Bisping Stann fight, I tell you what, that's the toughest fight in the three.
That's fight of the night for me anyway, definitely. I think it's going to be a cracker.
Because I tell you what, Stann has the power to put anybody's lights out at 185 pounds, but Bisping is very elusive. And if he can stay on the outside and not let Stann, you know, get in there with those big punches, you know, I'm leaning towards Michael Bisping by decision, but this is honestly the toughest fight on the card to pick.
Is this the apology card for the UFC 149 and trying to give something back to the Canadian fan base and make them slightly less pissed off after what they might have paid for in the past?
You know, I would say yes, with the exception of this fight. Real, this card even came together by default because of what happened with UFC 161. You know, I think when we look back at this year, guys, we're going to call 2012 the year of the injury.
Yeah.
You know, it's ruined so many big fights. I think I saw somebody on Twitter post earlier that 8 main event fights have been changed or canceled due to injuries this year in the UFC, and that's unheard of. You know, we've had a lot of injuries. You're always going to have a lot of injuries, but very rarely will you have them happen to the top of the card so often. So I'd like to think it's a payback, but honestly, I think it's just a matter of default because we've had so many bad things happen that this card put together for UFC 152 ended up being great. Unfortunately, it came at the expense of UFC 151 even happening.
And Devin, is this going to continue, though, with the fighters' insurance now that the fighters don't have to go into a fight to get, like, you know, if they're going in with a niggle, they don't have to go in there to get their injury paid for and just get it fixed after the fight? They can pull out now. Is this going to be a revolving team that we're going to be seeing for Dana White to deal with forevermore now?
You know, I've heard that a lot about the insurance, and I'll tell you, I truly don't believe that's a case of why we're seeing more injuries. I think it's something that Dana said a couple of months ago, and I know this firsthand because I've watched it, are the fighters that really, really, really push the pace in training. You know, these super camps, as I call them, you know, when you look at Greg Jackson's training room, yeah. You've got John Jones, you've got Ryan... got George St. Pierre, you've got Carlos Condit. At any given time, you've got, I mean, literally 4 or 5 championship-level fighters. And this is a fighting sport, guys, and let's be honest with ourselves. Who wants to give an inch, even in training? Yeah. Who wants to say they got beat in a sparring fight? Who wants to say they got beat on the weights? Who wants to say they got beat in sprints? This is competitive nature. So everybody wants to compete to be the best, and sometimes I honestly believe guys are pushing themselves further than they should. I mean, if I could tell you the amount of fighters I've talked to in the last year that have told me they had to literally be pulled out of the training room because they were burning themselves out of training too hard. And it's that pace. You know, people are forced to want to train at pace. I'm not saying anyone's forcing them to, but I'm saying they force themselves to, and it causes injuries.
And one final comment before we wrap it up, Damon. Obviously, GSP announced he's medically fit to fight against Carlos Condit. It's been 2 years since GSP has fought. Can we really expect to see the same GSP we've seen in the past? And are people sort of, you know, overlooking Condit still? And I think Condit should probably go into this fight as favourite, no?
Yeah, you know, I've said this. I actually, last October, when they matched up George St. Pierre with Carlos Condit, I actually picked Carlos Condit to win by third round TKO. And I'm sticking by that pick, but I'm a little more confident in it now. Listen, George St. Pierre may be the most freakish athlete in this sport. He has an unbelievable work ethic. I guarantee his rehab has been, you know, just above and beyond what most normal athletes would do.
Yeah.
But with that said, when you talk about major reconstructive knee surgery, I mean, these are injuries that end careers in other sports.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say that GSP will come back and look exactly the same, or what happens when he plants for that first hard takedown and he doesn't get it, or, you know, when he slips on a mat and just slips. And we've seen guys, and we saw Patrick Cote slip on a mat against Anderson Silva and the fight was over. So these little things happen that creep into your mind. I hope GSP comes back and looks fantastic, but you've got to wonder, you know, almost 2 years away, serious knee surgery, you know, rehab, time off. It's a tough prospect, but, you know, it is GSP, so I guess if we're going to have faith in anybody, it can be that guy.
Yeah.
And to wrap it up, we had John Albert and Andy Ogle on the show tonight, former TUF contestants and current UFC fighters. What's your opinion on the whole John Jones situation and the Greg Jackson camp about UFC 151? And do you think it was a dark day for the sport, the fact the event was cancelled?
You know, it is a dark day in a sense because we've never seen a UFC event cancelled. I brought this up earlier this week on my radio show, and I said that, you know, remember the moments when the Affliction show got canceled, when Josh Barnett had the positive test and they canceled the entire Affliction show. The entire MMA world was at that moment essentially saying Affliction was going out of business. And unfortunately, they eventually did. And it's happened with a lot of organizations. Canceling an event is like signing, you know, a failure slip. So it is bad, but I don't think in this case it is catastrophic. I think honestly we can really chalk this up to the injury problem, because listen, I don't think it's right to blame John Jones, because John Jones didn't cancel the event. John Jones, in my opinion, should have taken the fight, because I think he would have won the fight, but you can't fault a guy who is on top of the world in a championship situation and say, you got to fight somebody else different in 8 days. I mean, if it was boxing and it was Floyd Mayweather and Manny Pacquiao, and Manny Pacquiao got injured, and they said, you know what, we're going to shove you in there with Tim Bradley now, and he's a completely different fighter, are we going to really get mad that Mayweather says, no, that's not the fight I signed on for, and they have to reschedule? We're just so used in MMA to guys saying, I'll take the fight. You know, and for him to say no, we vilify him. But I don't think it's right. I mean, again, I believe he should have taken the fight because I believe he would have won. But can I blame the cancellation of the event on John Jones? No, I can't.
But should a champion not take his fight, though, no?
Yeah, I mean, you know, again,
he's scheduled to take a fight. Should he not step up to anyone in that division, because he's representing the division at that weight? No.
Yeah, I mean, I don't disagree with that at all. I don't. I just, you know, the thing is that, you know, again, I think he should have taken the fight. I think it's going to look bad on him for not taking the fight. But again, you know, we've had other main event fights. I mean, Jose Aldo, for instance, has pulled out of a couple title fights in the last year for injuries, and the cards had to shift around and change and things like that, but we still had a great undercard. This, to me, this situation comes down to, yes, John Jones should have fought, but it was the rest of the card, unfortunately, that really caused the cancellation. Because had they had, you know, another big fight on this card, had they had, I'm throwing out names, but I mean, you know, if they had had a Shogun versus Gustafson, or even a BJ Penn, Rory McDonald, even something else that people would still tune in and buy, then it wouldn't be that nearly bad of a deal. It's because the entire event had to get canceled that we're looking and pointing at John Jones for what he did.
Yeah. And Damon, how do you think Fox, especially with the cancellation of the event, has this rubbed off on Fox? What's Fox's reaction been to this event? Or will there be any repercussions or anything like that with the UFC?
No, I don't think so. I mean, listen, Fox is very letting the UFC do their own thing. You know, they're not very hands-on with the production of the UFC. You know, they're going to let them handle their own business. You know, Fox is definitely a partner with the UFC, but it's no different than, you know, they have here in the States, they broadcast the National Football League. You know, they would never tell the National Football, hey, you know, we want different referees in this game because we don't like those guys on TV. You know, they would never say that. So it's similar to that. Yes, they do have an influence, and yes, they definitely are partners, but they're not, I don't think there's going to be any repercussions with the UFC for any of the decisions they make in these situations.
Yeah, well, I suppose, especially now since they've thrown them a bone in a UFC on Fox 5 now, because that is certainly going to be the top Fox card that they're going to be getting, really, isn't it?
Yeah, it definitely is. I mean, it's a fantastic card they put together. This is the magic formula, guys. I've said this for a long time. There is a magic formula to selling a Fox card, and I think the UFC finally figured it out with the title fight at the top. You've got, you know, recognizable names. I think BJ Penn is by far the biggest star to put on this card. You got a great fight with a great young guy in Alexander Gustafson and Shogun. I mean, I think they finally got the formula figured out, because they tried it. You know, they've tried a few different things. They realized what the ratings are going to be. And let's not forget, with the title fight, you know, before they started promoting Junior Dos Santos and Cain Velasquez, no one really knew them either. So I think they're going to promote Diaz and Henderson. You get in the crowd with maybe a Shogun and a BJ Penn, and I think they finally figured out what's going to make a great card.
Damon, absolutely fantastic to have your insight to the week in MMA. That's Damon Martin from MMAWeekly.com. Thanks a million, Damon, for your time.
Thanks so much, man.
Thank you for having me.